Carla R. And from Tujunga, California, sobriety date of September 25th, 1987. Carly, you're going to be sharing your experience, strength, and hope for 20 minutes, and the share will be audio recorded, as you just heard. Our timekeeper, who today is Emily, will give you a 2-minute warning. Go ahead and take it away, Carla.
All right. Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Carla, and I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to thank a lady named Amy I had written down who invited me, and then Sharon for following up, and I thank all of you for being here. And I just love after everybody introduces themselves, we hear this cacophonous wail of "I love you and you, there's nothing you can do about it." Blah 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 blah, and that is what my husband would call the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's love. And if you're new here, I love that this is the Newcomers International meeting. And if you're new here, I want you to know that you are loved and you're in the right place if you're alcoholic. This is Alcoholics Anonymous was the portal through which I traveled to be able to live in the world at large, which I never could do before. And I know everybody comes by their alcoholism differently, but at some point it seems that we all end up in the same place of alcoholism, where we're either drinking or thinking about drinking to some degree all the time. And when I got to AA, I would have told you that I was an alcoholic because of my crazy, dark, dramatic, violent, perverted family. I had one of those childhoods that, I could just make the case of why I needed to drink. And then I started meeting people in AA, like my husband, who lived a charmed childhood. That guy really, nothing. I mean, even if their family had challenges, they got together and supported each other through them. It was like really weird to me. They grew up singing together and loving each other through all their troubles. And my family, we loved each other, but we just didn't know how to do it, And so we'd blow up, and his family, came together. And besides that, he didn't even start drinking till the ripe old age of 18, and didn't get sober till many, many years, till in his 40s. I started very early. So circumstances really don't matter that much. The rest of the steps after the first step, they pretty much take care of any inventory I have, cleaning up the past and taking care of present growth, and then growth for the future. But I really needed to get over this juggernaut of alcoholism. I needed to have this arrested because I wasn't going to get to the rest of the stuff if I didn't stop drinking. And I know that people get fancy about the description of alcoholism here and say all kinds of things about alcoholism, but I believe that the best description of alcoholism is on page 44 in our big book. And I'm not going to sit and quote the book to you all day long, but I will quote this passage because I believe it's important and the crux of the matter here. And that is, if when you honestly want to find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Boom. There's the problem. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. Boom. There's a solution. And in the language of the 1930s, back then they used the word spiritual experience, but if you want to call it, they also use the term psychic change, something from the inside out. This thing that lives in all of us, life's longing for itself, or whatever you want to call it, trying to come alive and keep us alive. And I always felt this connection since I was a small child. I felt that connection with this God, if you will. But when alcohol came along, it was just so much quicker than saying a prayer. I could take a drink and I felt better right away. So it really kind of seemed like the solution, It seemed like it was working for me. Even though I have to tell you all these years later that I don't remember anybody else ever saying, "Give her another drink, it works for her." Most of the time they were telling me I probably ought not to drink, but it felt like it did, And so I started to let it do the work. I let it become my spirituality. I let it become my growing up muscle. I let it become the thing that made me feel buffered from you. And I let it become the thing that made me feel connected to you all at the same time. Why wouldn't I drink something that seemed to solve all of that? And so I did. And I left home at an early age, and all of that ended up in my inventory later on. And I spent most of my adolescent life in one lockup or another. And when I finally escaped at the ripe old age of 17, I hit the rowdy road with my roommates and headed off into happy destiny. And I eventually ended up hooking up with a boyfriend from rehab. I know that some of you can identify with that. Rehab is where they keep a lot of the partners, and I got me one. And we ended up living in a tent in the mountains in southern Oregon. And I wanted to live my life right. I mean, I really wanted to somehow get launched into this life. I mean, I was institutionalized. I didn't really know how to live in the outside world, and I wasn't stupid, but I was pretty sick. And by that time, we were drinking homemade wine and moonshine because it was organic. Excuse me. Excuse me, and much better for you, we thought. And still no change. No, so hold on. I'm sorry. So anyway, then we had this little girl. I got pregnant with this little girl, and I thought that having this little girl was going to change the way I drank. And most of us know that alcoholism doesn't care who you love. It just doesn't matter. And by that time, I was getting my clothes and shoes and the necessities of life out of a box behind a store in town. And I thought I was going to be a better parent than the ones I had. And I just want to tell you, because I don't have a lot of time, I'm going to skip to the part where, that little girl was the most important person in the world to me. I would have told you. And later on, when I got into, my first legitimate work was in the bar business. Before that, I had been a street hooker. I had learned how to turn tricks when I was 14 years old. And that was how I learned how to make a living. And so now I'm in the bar business. It seemed to me to be a step up, and it never occurred to me not to drink on the job. Why else would you have that job? It just seemed to me to be cosmically efficient, And I just have to tell you that when my daughter was almost 4 years old and we were renting a room for my aunt, I got up and kissed her goodbye, as I always did before I left for work, and took off for the job that I was working about 20, 30 miles away, and stopped at the bar I always stopped at on the way to the bar I worked at. And I had my pre-work drinks, two shots of Cuervo and two Bud Backs, two drinks and alcoholic math. And contrary to how it had been for all the months before that, where I would get up off the bar stool and head to work, for whatever reason that day, the phenomenon of craving kicked in, and I couldn't get off the bar stool. It kicked in to the degree that all the rationalization that I needed to get up off the bar stool and go to a job I really loved, I wasn't unhappy with, I wasn't filled with trauma or unhappiness or drama. I had just started to drink, and the drink took the drink, and it became paramount to all else, everything, including my job. So the knowledge that I needed to go to the job I really liked going to wasn't enough, nor was the knowledge that my little girl was waiting at home for me so that we could play for a little while and go to sleep and wake up in the morning and play again before I had to go to work, wasn't enough that day to overcome the phenomenon of craving that happens once I start to drink. And if Just Don't Drink were to work, you'd have a different speaker today. That's for sure, because by that time, the handcuffs of alcoholism had neatly wrapped themselves around me, and I was in that torturous state of alcoholism where I was either drinking or thinking about it all the time. When I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about the next one, and now they had collided, and I sat on the bar stool, and I lost the kid, and I lost the job. And for the next 4.5 years, I would come to or wake up, and I would know full well that my daughter was better off where she was, which was not with me, and my heart would break, and I still couldn't stop drinking. And just to skip to fast forward, I love that beautiful little understatement that Bill writes that we all have our own version of, which is where he says, gradually things got worse. And we all know what that is. Gradually things got worse. And I married my drinking partner, and ended up mar eventually marrying him. Our relationship was such that the way we settle our arguments was with a shotgun. Whoever got to the gun first won. And then much later, on and on and on it went, until finally, I had gotten my daughter back, and and I want to dispel a little bit of myth here too. I had a lot of ego when I got here, and I would say things like, I never wanted to drink like a normal person. I always wanted to be insanely drunk. But I have to tell you something, looking back at my drinking, that wasn't always true. How many times do I wish I could have just had a couple of drinks and gone to work? Just had a couple of drinks and finished my shift. Just had a couple of drinks and do the laundry. Just had a couple of drinks and not have my life blow up in my face almost every single time toward the end. How many? And non-alcoholics can get drunk if they set out to, and certainly I did plenty of times, but it was the times that I didn't want to. I just wanted to have a couple. Why can't I do that? That's alcoholism. That is that weird allergy of the body, that abnormal reaction that only alcoholics have. And it gets worse over time. And then it does so much for me that I can't do anything but think about it all the time. I can't resist that thought. And that thought brings me to the first one, and then I'm dead. And so, anyway, we ended up one Saturday afternoon, the cops are in the driveway one more time. The neighbors are watching us again. I had gotten my daughter back when she was 8 and a half, but I didn't get sober till she was almost 10. So there was a whole bunch more mess she had to go through before anything got set right. The cops left. They took the gun. The husband left for the last time. It was me and the kid and the booze, and I still couldn't stop drinking. And here's where a hard drinker might take a look at their life and say something like, "Man, I can't control this. I gotta quit." And they do. And they move on with their life. They have a story to tell if somebody asks them, and they move on. Me as an alcoholic, what I did was I just pulled the booze closer to the couch so I didn't have to keep getting up to get another drink, because I drank through my circumstances. I drank through homelessness, and I drank through drug addiction, and I drank through the loss of my daughter, and I was getting ready to do it again. And so, to fast forward, my first sponsor told me if I wanted to affect a conscious contact with a power greater than myself, I might start by counting the coincidences that happen in my life. Those situations that seem to fall together for the good of everyone without me having my hands on it. And I like that idea. I could get my hands around that. Even though I had had a connection at one time with a power greater than myself, I didn't know. It was a really kind of a vague memory now and a bare belief that I could have that. And so, but the first coincidence I could count was that I had been living all along this time next door to a woman who had 5 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she had seen and heard that whole deal go down that Saturday. And she came over just a couple days later and knocked on my door. And in her hand, she had those dorky little books, the big book and the 12 and 12 in her hand. And the longer I stay sober, the more I realize how really brave that was that she knocked on my door. She came over having seen what she saw that Saturday, and she knocked on my door anyway. And I didn't know it at the time until, much later, I realized that while she was practicing her 12th step, they were becoming the seeds of my first. And she sat and she talked about her drinking and her relationship with alcohol. And in her story, I heard mine. So much so that after that was all, I wasn't really sure it was going to work for me, but it planted seeds, and about a week and a half later, I just didn't go back and buy any more booze. And I ended up shaking it out in my little apartment for the weekend and in a couple days into the following week. And, there was no more treatment left for me. People have been trying to help me all my life. That's just the way I see it. That's what happened. And I ended up back on my neighbor's doorstep and asked her what to do. And she sent me up to a meeting in Sierra Madre, California. And that became my first home group. And it was all very simple. There were no, I mean, I walked in, I sat way back by the open door and the exit sign just in case, and I heard that beautiful noise that we heard, in this meeting before it was started, people greeting. God, you got the most enthusiastic greeter. I think it was Robert that was doing that. But anyway, wonderful. Yes, keep it up. And all that stuff was going on in this room. And then I was sitting in this row, and I heard these two guys talking down at the end of my row, and I heard one of them say, "Hey Joe, how's your lawn?" And I was like, "What?" And I thought, "Oh my God, could my life ever be so elegant and simple as to be concerned about a lawn?" It just seemed so far removed from where my life had gone, and it sounded like hope to me. It was like my Winchester Cathedral moment. It felt like hope. And I stayed, and I got to tell you, I love that line in the book where it says, what seemed at first a flimsy reed proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God, because we never know what it's going to be. We get so, and yes, we got to, I had to do the steps out of the book. I had to do them in earnest, and I had to do them in a, I needed to do them in a formal way. But I got to tell you all the things along the way that if you had said, oh, do this, you would have said, what the hell does that have to do with getting sober? Like the two guys talking about their lawn at the end of my row, or the lady at the end of the meeting asking me to read something at the end of and how it pulled me into the room just a little bit more, and they'd say things like, go out tomorrow and do something for somebody and don't get caught. Like, what? That kept me busy all day, trying to think about how to do stuff like that, and not get credit or, something like, in a self-seeking way. And all those little things, like, they helped when the meeting doors closed behind me, and the steps had not yet taken root inside me, and the obsession to drink certainly hadn't been lifted for me, not till about 9 months. And I hope you hear that. For some of it's different. Some people get here day one, and they are no longer obsessed with alcohol. What is left, to reinforce and to create this spiritual cushion that keeps us sober is all that's left for them to do. But for me, I was about 9 months sober when that horrible nattering lullaby of rationalization was finally lifted on for me. And so stay. And it's just proof to me that I had to get comfortable with being a little uncomfortable, sometimes a lot uncomfortable, until things change, until I changed, actually. Things, sometimes they change and sometimes they don't. But I am on the, I have never stopped changing. Always in transition, always. And so stuff happened. My daughter, she grew up. It was for me to make amends and give her a different life. And it is always progress and not perfection. Always, always. I have never had to do this perfectly except the first half of the first step, but I have had to be all in. And some days my 150% may look like 80 to you, but it's my 150, and so every day I get up, my feet, before my feet hit the ground, it's good morning world, God, direct my thinking, my feet hit the floor, I say thank you. I come in here and I sit and I take the time in that 11th step, and I always do a better 10th step throughout my day when I'm doing 11, and always a better 11 when I'm doing 10. I'm okay with the infinite. I love the woo-woo and I love all of that, but step 10 keeps my feet on the ground. And I needed to learn how to have a relationship with you and the earth people. So and then my daughter got better after having to put her in treatment for a little while when she was 11 years old. And as she grew, and she had a baby when she was 16, and I got to be the kind of a mom I wanted to be. And our troubles weren't over yet, but we were better. Every day that sobriety cha-cha, two steps forward, one back, one forward, two back, just like that. She's 48 years old now, and she has two beautiful sons. One's 25 and the other's 31. And they're both beautiful young men. And last October, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer in aggressive form and had some heavy
2 minutes,
duty,
that's Carol.
thank you. She had some heavy duty treatment coming ahead. I'm the one she called and asked to be with her. And I said, don't you want your girlfriends to be with you? They're so much fun. I mean, she's got these really great friends. I said, you don't want them to be? And she said, nope, I want you. You're low maintenance and I don't have to take care of you. And she felt safe enough with me. So we went through that. And now she's pretty much on the other side of that. She's got reconstruction coming up later in the year, but she walked through that like a champ. And I got to be there for that. So some of these things take time in the unfolding, but they get better. And I need to every day note the good things. The balance sheet of my inventory also needs to be in the black. When I was 5 years sober, I was raped by an intruder, and just to note that if we ever think that we have a reason to drink, our book always talks about those insanely trivial excuses in light of our relationship with alcohol, that we know before the most insane thing I could ever do is stone cold sober, look at a drink and pick it up and drink it. That is alcoholic insanity. And so what you guys gave me, just to in short, was the great big instead with a capital I. I do this instead, comfortable or uncomfortable. And now after 38 years, it's been a huge balance of both. You know, I've had this spiritual awakening sufficient to bring about a human experience. And I got to tell you know, I'm married to my best friend. We got the dog, we got the truck. You know, we're like a backwards country western song. And we just, you know, and when trouble comes, we try to cheerfully capitalize. Sometimes we cry, you know, we're not immune to that. But we live in the now. And if you're new, I want you to know it can work for you too if you do it. That's the rub.
Thank you so much, Carla.